Music industry and record production graduate Sam BK presents the Independent Music Podcast. The Independent Music Podcast.
Here we are, the Independent Music Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. I'm your host, Sam BK. The podcast for all those people's lives who are influence driven or just improved by the art we know and love, that is music. So, you know what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about independent musicians, artists, songwriters, composers, promoters, managers from all over the UK and even the world. Even if there's a fire. Even. Okay. So, you know, anyone all over the world who wants to discuss music, the industry, or even if they want information on how to survive and thrive in their career. And like we said before, there's millions of great stories out there and pieces of advice that you can hear right on the Independent Music Podcast. So, oh, fuck off. Who's ringing me? I don't want to do your survey. Can you hear this? I will not do your survey. 01315 6 something. Goodbye. Ugh. Fuck off. I'm busy. I'm doing the Independent Music Podcast. Okay, anyway, so, like I was saying, you can follow us on at The Music Indies on Twitter to keep up with new You can follow us on at The Music Indies on Twitter to keep up with new episodes and other updates. Right, let's get on with the episode then. As we've explained before, I'm a 21-year-old graduate and I've got an incredible passion for music, which is why I'm doing this podcast for all you lovely people. But we know all about that. We know about SamBK.com. We know about my SoundCloud, SamBK Official. And what we talk about here, like I mentioned before, is, you know, people from all over the world involved in music. I've met many people from all over the world whose lives are driven by music, all sorts of arts, media. Everything crosses over, and I'm hoping to get as many people as I can on the podcast for you so we can really have a broad outlook on the different avenues of life that music leads people down. So, I mean, there's some of my friends who are working in different countries right now because of how their life has been taken by music. I mean, I think that's really cool. That's where that's where music took them. They're in another country, like on a beach, chilling somewhere, like on a piano, or working for... It depends what you really want to do, but there's plenty of stories that we'll get into. Today on the podcast, I'm going to be talking to Neil Kennedy, who actually owns his own studio. It's in Southampton, which is where I studied for my university degree. And it's a music studio called The Ranch. We're going to be talking about, you know, how would you go about setting up your own recording studio, how he did it. It's been going for 10 years now. We're going to be talking about some of the bands he's recorded and how it's sort of affected his life and where the different avenues it's taken him down, like how he's now gone into teaching music production as well as running the music studio. We talk about different music scenes, Southampton, for instance. Interning, which is an interesting one, because he talks about the difference between UK and LA, the career ladder in relation to different studios, because it's a very different scene from here and abroad. And we also talk about how he himself got into music. It's a very interesting chat. But before we get to the interview, I just wanted to look into... I thought it would be cool if we looked into what happened on this day in history, but in music. So we can do that. And on this day, it is July 27th. Is it July 27th? Yes, it's Sunday, July 27th, 2014, but in 1991, Bryan Adams, he started a 7-week run, famous, so, oh no, this isn't the UK one, that's the US one. Well, I know it was on the UK charts as number one for a very painful amount of time, but it was 7 weeks on the run at the number one in the US singles chart, so I'm not sure, I'm not entirely sure about the UK one. I know it. Get in touch, tell me. Tell me how long it was actually number one for in the UK, because I know it was a silly amount of time, but here we go. Let's just have a listen to... I'm just going to... Here we go. Let me there, you dying for. Dying for. No, it's true. Everything I do, do it for you. Do it for you. Oh my god, that pre-chorus, guys, wow. Very sort of 90s. Well, I mean, it was 91, but it's very, it's not very 80s, but it's got that anthemic feel to it of stadium rock, but it's very pop as well. It's let's put the last chorus on. The reverb on that snare. Okay. Anyway, sorry. Oh, I bet you'll love that. In 1996, this is another cool fact I found out. I won't bore you with too many of these. But the Spice Girls scored their first number one UK single with Wannabe, which... Let's play. I mean, personally, I was in... Where was it? LA? I was in LA recently, and... Me and my friends were just at this, you know, restaurant on, we're on Venice Beach, just having some pizza, and, you know, it's quite a lively sort of bar, people, like, the staff were quite into it, there was, like, pop songs on the radio, anyway, like, they, you know, they were dancing sort of normally to whatever song was on, just to get them through the day, but when Wannabe by Spice Girls came on, they lost their shit. Collectively, they all together went like, oh my god, Spice, this is a song that's like, what, 13 years old? 13 years old? No, wait, no, actually. No, the Bryan Adams was 91, wasn't it? Oh, 1996. Okay, so not 13 years old, but yeah, you know, it's an old song, but people are going crazy. Oh my god, it felt like it was their national anthem. I mean, it's a girl power anthem, I get that, but... Yeah, okay. I'm gonna put on Wannabe right now. Let's remember this one. I just realized something. This might be the catchiest song ever. Precious time. What I really, really want. What you really, really want. I wanna hit. Beauty of pop, people. Do you know what she wants to do? All she wants to do is zig a zig ah. No one's telling her she can't do that. Like, she's expressing that in that song. She's connecting with all those other millions of people that want to zig a zig ah. Maybe. That is the key to, you know, selling records. It's about connecting with people who also... That's what it was when I was in LA. All those people who worked at... Like, all the staff, obviously, they felt like they wanted to zig a zigar as well. Ugh, it's like a Hakuna Matata, isn't it? Hakuna Matata, zig a zigar. Ugh, carpe diem, bitch. Okay, anyway, enough rambling from me for today. I'm going to get you forward to the interview, and I hope you enjoy it, with Neil Kennedy of The Ranch. Here we go. Okay, here we are. I'm with Neil Kennedy of The Ranch Studios in Southampton. We're just at university. He comes in once a week, but we'll get into that in a bit. So, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good. Early morning at university. Well, yeah. For me, it's an early morning.
It's early.
But yeah, cool. So let's just talk about we can talk about The Ranch in a bit. But mm-hmm. how did you get started with music and everything?
Wow, years and years ago. Yeah. I grew up with parents that listened to a lot. Well, my dad listened to a lot of guitar-y stuff, Police and kind of stuff like that. So I got into the idea of playing guitar, and by the time I was about 11, I started playing guitar.
All right, okay.
And then you know, by 15 I was in a band playing sort of shows at our local place, and maybe slightly ahead of the curve at that age, but yeah, not that we were any good. But, and it just went on from there, really. I just kind of just was a bit of a sponge for music, and I had got a four-track recorder and recorded my stuff at home, and then when my dad brought back his first decent desktop and he went away to work, I'd install music software on it and start making drum and bass and stuff like that. So, I was sort of playing and recording in early teens, really teens. And
that's a good start. Just put my phone on silent. Whoopsie daisy. Cool. Because I mean, a lot of people usually start out like playing an instrument and whatever, but that's quite. I think I didn't start playing gigs until. I'm trying to think real gigs, not like little ones for your parents in school and things like that. But no, I didn't think because I was like 15, 16, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's about the same, like 15.
Did you go into more studying for music then after your band and stuff?
No, I mean, the kind of music side of things, I took a bit more natural approach rather than the holistic approach to music, rather than the study of it. I could sight read a little bit, but generally that wasn't really my forte. Not really sure what my forte was, to be totally frank, but I think it was more like the creative aspect of stuff.
Okay, so did you know like what you wanted to go into?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I did music technology at sixth form.
Okay.
But when I was doing that, you know, it wasn't sort of Pro Tools and Macs and stuff like that. It was synthesis and a lot of really boring stuff that's closer to maths and physics, really. It wasn't great. But, I mean, at the same time as that, I was really into cinema. I decided at a university that there'd be much more chance of me getting a job in Hollywood than there would be as a musician or a recording star. I decided to do a degree in film, and music became just like a hobby.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Post-university, was in a rock band and toured a bunch and recorded some stuff, and it kind of set alight my desire to want to record and create again. So
yeah, that's quite cool. That's because I always at first I never really knew what I wanted to do, obviously, because I love music and whatever, but I started out and I did TV and film at college, and I thought that's what I wanted to get into, and then it kind of become. I always had music as a hobby, and then I kind of decided that more shifted, and that's what I want to do for my career, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think looking at like film music and things like that was definitely a big factor.
Yeah.
So I see what you're saying with the.
Yeah, I mean, it was more. I think it was just the creative aspect. It wasn't so much with film. I didn't really want to be handling cameras. I wanted to be writing, but for screen. Similar discipline to writing songs or whatever.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, that's how I kind of got where I am. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I suppose the creative, I preferred being on that side of the glass, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was, you played gigs and things like that. But you just preferred.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't enjoy touring at all.
Okay.
I enjoyed playing.
Yeah.
Performing.
Yeah.
But I didn't enjoy touring. For me, songcraft and the production values were the thing that I was most keen on. Or most excited by, I should say. I'd rather have spent a week in a studio than a week on the road. So kind of makes it, sums it up, really.
Okay. So you were more of like behind the glass kind of thing. Did you realise that sort of after you did your studies then? Because you said you were in a band.
No, I think I kind of knew that.
You knew already.
But joining a pretty good band and a band with profile and suddenly you have really good shows you can play. I mean, that's exciting. So, I mean, that definitely took my attention for a while. I was quite enthused by it, and then it didn't take long until it was like, oh, this is boring. Stuck in the back of a van on the M3 again, or the A34, or whatever. Yeah. Just absolute hell.
Yeah, because some people love that. Yeah. Some people absolutely thrive on it, don't they?
Absolutely. So. I was in a van with four other guys that did thrive on it, and I didn't. So that's why it didn't last all that long for me, really, and that's why since then, any music projects I've done as an artist have been quite deliberately, we haven't toured, we've done couple of shows, but that's been for the fun of it, for the creation of it. You know?
Yeah. Obviously, a bit of studying, and you did the band thing. You didn't sort of I want to do behind the glass sort of thing. What avenue did you then take?
I remember going to Sweden with my girlfriend.
Okay.
And in Sweden, I decided I'm going to set up a studio.
Oh, wow.
Because I'd had like a bedroom set up for years.
Yeah.
I'd gotten to the point where I was probably terrible at it then, but in my mind, I was like doing a good job, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is a really sensible use of my time and money that I don't really have, would be to spend loads and loads on gear that I don't really understand. And around that time, I'd formed a new band with some friends and met Tim.
Oh, okay, yes.
From Planet Sounds, and I noticed Tim had a lot of space, a couple of rooms he wasn't really using.
Yeah.
And he seemed like a reasonable, upstanding gentleman. So we got on pretty well straight away, and I just sort of floated the concept with him, and he was particularly keen on having that as a faculty within his company. So we created this kind of symbiotic relationship over the years, where I had a tiny little room. I've no idea how we used it, but a tiny little room for control room.
Yeah.
And that was wired into his rooms, and we would track.
Yeah.
And it was like a good relationship, you know. Bands wanted
shitty demos, naturally.
And we could knock out shitty demos all day long.
Yeah, definitely.
And as I got better at it, better bands wanted a bit more. But then the problem is, Planet Sounds is a unique kind of environment. You're not going to find many spaces like that, and it isn't for everyone. You know, some people find it inspiring and kind of grungy and cool. Other people just don't want to spend days and days in there. So I found that in order, if I was going to take it further, I needed to, you know, like sort of spread my wings, so to speak, and took a big risk. I mean, it was all in, you know, all along it was sort of in dialogue with him, and he understood the motives and understood why it would probably benefit, well, it certainly benefit me. And I thought probably in the long term it would benefit him as well.
Like, definitely.
So I moved out to the sticks and started the ranch.
Did you, are you from Southampton?
No, I'm from sort of between Bedford and Cambridge.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
I came to this university for my degree.
Oh, right. And I've
sort of stayed ever since.
Oh, okay. That's fair enough. So, was it more of a case of experiencing things for yourself and learning just from recording bands and stuff? You didn't?
No, I didn't study it or anything like that, mate.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fair. So there wasn't necessarily like trying to get experience of people who already...
No, I probably should have done. Things I'm quite... I've got like a weird determination streak whereby I'm not determined about everyday things.
Yeah.
But every now and again I get something between my teeth and I'm like, that's it. This is it. I'm going to nail it. And I don't really ever... And I think the problem being with stuff like that is I don't ever feel like I've nailed it. So I'm always frothing at the mouth to get better and better and better. So with the studio thing, once I had it in my mind I was going to I was going to kind of do it, then... I mean, I've been doing it for 10 years now, and I still listen back to every bit of work I do and think, oh, nowhere near. Do you know what I mean? No matter who comes to work with me, no matter how much budget they've got, no matter how much faith they put in me, I still go home at the end of the day and go like, no, I can do it better, I can do it better, I can do it better. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
I think you kind of probably need that if you don't have that. Some people are just blessed with innate skills. You know, we all know that guy that can pick up a guitar and 2 weeks later
he can just naturally
we all know guys like that, and they're out there, but and they're probably better than you or I would ever be, but the thing is they lack that absolute grit.
If you're really good at something, you lack the passion to want to be
maybe you think, you know, so and a discipline like this isn't something you can achieve. It's not a computer game you can complete and be the end boss. It's a fluid process, and it's ever changing, and it's getting more complex every day and more demanding every day. So if you think I've nailed it, I am now the recording engineer, you're probably not going to get much more work off that, because I don't think it really works like that.
Did you so you did like recording like little bands and stuff like that, demos, whatever. Did, obviously you said you wanted to do, make your own studio, you decided, right, I'm going to make my own recording place and things like that. How did you go about funding, like, getting it started?
I had a my car that I sold.
Wow.
And that paid for my first bunch of stuff.
Car's got to go.
Yeah. I had like quite a nice little car.
Yeah.
And I just got rid of it and bought a 1994 205 GTI for about 400 quid to replace it. And put everything else in. And my dad, who's, I'm extremely lucky.
Yeah.
Like really supportive.
Okay, that's good.
Parents, when you're younger and you've got these stupid ideas about being a rock star or writing films or whatever, they kind of humour it to the point of ridiculousness where they're happy to part fund stuff. So,
yeah.
So my dad basically, he made me see if you're going to do a business, you have to have a business plan. You have to have, you know, like profit and loss projections.
Yeah, that's like proving all this kind of stuff. Yeah. Parents kind of thing,
he's from a school of like business kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
So he wanted to if I could prove that I wasn't an idiot, that it wasn't just a whim, then he basically backed me. He put, I don't know, it wasn't lots and lots of money, but like £1,000.
Yeah,
it was enough to buy a few bits of a few leads and a few, whatever. It wasn't like, hey son, here's Dave Grohl studio. It was much more minimal than that. A lot less than that. But from there, I mean, I've done things a way which my now wife probably thinks is stupid. Instead of taking home money, I've basically constantly reinvested it.
Oh, okay.
So I've lived on minimum wage for the majority of my adult life, basically, while reinvesting. But the upshot is I've now got a facility which I'm extremely proud of, and the other chaps that are involved with me, I know they are as well.
Oh, okay.
And we as a result of this and a result of our hard work and our endeavours, we're beginning to attract bigger projects and finally, finally we're getting to the point where maybe I grudgingly accept that some of my work stands up against other people, you know.
Okay, cool. So did you have, were you sort of like minimum wage sort of jobs, like trying to pay for you?
I held down a job. I mean, when I was in that band, and when I decided I was going to start a studio, I worked in a cinema. Oh,
okay, yeah, cool.
Just because it would give you the hours off you wanted.
And
it was pretty relaxed. When I did the studio, at the same time I made acquaintances with a guy that ran a guitar shop in Southampton.
Right. Yeah.
And he basically said, if you want a job, I'll give you a job.
All right.
Because I know my stuff about guitars.
I'm
like a massive, I'm a huge nerd about all that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay, cool.
I knew everything he'd need someone to know to sell guitars for him. So he said, you can run a studio and you can do this and they'll probably benefit each other in some way, you know.
Definitely.
So it wasn't for long. It's about a year I went to the guitar shop. And then after a year, I was turning over enough that I could theoretically not work in the guitar shop.
Okay.
And my meager draw from the studio would pay the bills kind of thing. But, you know, I wouldn't put money in the bank, but pay the bills. So.
Yeah, because, everyone who sort of, wants to sort of pursue a career in music, it's not a very... the industry's a bit different to a different kind of career plan and sort of things, because you've got to do, little jobs on the side.
One thing I've learned, I mean, there's a better way of doing things than I've done it.
Okay.
And that's a fact. But you probably have to do it the way I've done it to notice.
Exactly, you've got to...
You know, like, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I try and take on, a reasonable intern a year at the studio.
That's
mean,
cool.
It's not a successful program.
Okay.
Because people see that I get up at whatever time, I go to work and I leave late. And I go home and I think about it, and then I do the books, and I do the admin.
Okay.
And then I manage myself.
Yeah.
It's a 24-hour job. It's not, you know, this, and for the majority of my adult life, I've not been like a big drinker, I've not been a partier, I've not gone out, you know, like I haven't taken big holidays, I barely had holidays, you know, I've driven, you know, shitty cars, you know, everything you can imagine to make sure that what I did earn, I use sensibly as well, saved up or whatnot, but it can be a horror show of a job. Like, you have to really want to do it. And I think anything less than utter conviction, and you're not going to get anywhere. Because there's guys out there that are so good, and they will work hard. Do you know what I mean? I mean, there's young guys coming out now who, you know, I think they're great.
Mm.
I think what they're doing, they're doing it the right way. Mm. They're smart, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's always going to be that happening.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you think, I'm going to get a job in a studio, A, you're probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
B, if you do get it, you will work like a dog, an absolute dog. I mean, I've got my business partner at the moment is in LA. He's on sabbatical working at a studio in England. He's in LA at the moment.
Yeah.
He said the LA studio system is radically different from the way we do.
Okay.
If you want to be an intern there, if you want to get work experience,
yeah,
you spend like 2 years basically doing the showers, the bathroom, manning the front desk, answering the phones, doing the email. After that, you'll get a year assisting.
Yeah.
You know, and after that year, you know, it is... You know, that is how it's done. And then eventually, if you stick it out, you might actually get a job and the pay will be all right.
Yeah.
You know, they pay, studios get in LA specifically, get a better turnover than they would do in Nursling or Romsey where we are. You know? So it's almost like an absolute rite of passage. You have to do this, you know. If I said to my interns, there's the bog brush... Like, they would last a week. We think we're too good for that.
Yeah.
I still clean the toilets. I still clean my showers. I don't mind doing that. It's a means to an end. Like, I'd rather my clients got to take a dump in a clean toilet and thought higher of my studio, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people nowadays, they think they're going to walk in and they think they're going to...
You've got to pay your dues.
Yeah, they're going to be telling me what harmony to put in this bitch. I mean, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
It shouldn't work like that. It probably does because I'm an absolute softie, but it shouldn't work like that.
Did you ever consider not like pursuing music then? Did you, I mean, obviously, did you have sort of things well, like, because you said you had to say to your, like, your dad, I want to do this.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to write screenplays or TV. That's what I
did. Really... you ever have like sort of plan B or...
No, which is just as well, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Being serious, I think within a few years of doing the studio stuff, I was basically competing with Solent a lot of the time.
Yeah,
because the bread and butter work in Southampton, which is where I started off as bread and butter, obviously, there's a £3 million studio for free.
Mm.
Guys like you working in Solent. If there's a good engineer there, then suddenly
exactly.
It's a real threat because I'm charging whatever £140 a day, £150 a day.
You've got to make sure that you're
just peanuts, but it's 150 times more than, or you know, like infinitely more expensive than free. So around that time, I realised education is probably a sensible plan B.
Yeah,
and that sounds cynical. In reality, I love talking. I love beer. I love recording. I'm enthusiastic. I'm comfortable standing up and chatting in front of people.
Yeah.
You know, and I noticed that I had a predilection to take on interns. I wanted people.
Yeah.
And I wanted to teach them what I was doing. I thought, you know what? Some people might look at that and think it's a skill set as well. So I kind of opened my mind to the idea of doing some form of teaching, and my wife was enthusiastic about it because her parents are both teachers as well. So she was enthusiastic. She thought I'd do a good job, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I did a few just one-off lectures for a couple of the colleges and really, really enjoyed it. And around that time, I got to know Tony and Paul a little bit here. And there was an opportunity to do some lecturing, basically.
Okay.
And I suppose that in reality... is not a plan B. It's just a sort of divergence of plan A.
Definitely.
I wouldn't consider doing. This is hard work. It's really hard work.
Yeah.
But no, I never had a plan B.
Okay. Go on.
I was just saying, I think at one point I remember sitting in my flat thinking, looking at jobs, thinking, what could I do?
Mm.
And I thought, I probably suck at all of these jobs. I could probably sell things that I'm enthusiastic about, guitars or at the time, like, you know, cars or whatever. I could probably do that.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, there's this whole kind of like live your dreams, like, you know, do something up. I think that's bollocks. I think that denigrates hard work and it denigrates jobs.
It does.
You know, who wants to be a plumber? But it's a seriously important job, and if you're good at it, you can make so much money. And there's dignity in the fact that, you know, you've learned a trade and you work it. So this whole live your dream thing, I don't ascribe to that. I don't, because I do think it's good if you have a passion and you're dynamic and you're determined, then have a go. But at the same time, there's no you know, it's no ignominy in just working hard in a decent job and earning money.
Like, I don't think it does anyone good just assuming they're going to achieve greatness from nothing.
100%, yeah.
People need to realise it's going to make them better learning the hard way and earning the way up to something rather than just being handed.
There's a real generation of people out there that feel like they deserve something.
Yeah, they're owed.
You know, they have this kind of like entitlement to success, or entitlement to pleasure, or entitlement to happiness.
Yeah.
And that is bollocks.
I think everything is sort of given to you from...
It absolutely is, yeah.
And you take everything for granted. Mm. I mean...
There's bands that I work with, naming no names.
Yeah.
And I meet, and they whinge about how no one's come with their shows. They whinge about how, if people aren't careful, bands won't play shows anymore. I'm sorry... People come to your shows when you write great songs.
Yeah.
And great songs takes effort and hard work and dedication and determination and humility, the ability to sit back and go, maybe people aren't coming to our shows because we haven't written good songs yet. You know, like, if you sit back and think, I've written a banger, no one's coming to my shows, there's a simple equation there.
I know, it's easy to point the finger at people and like, oh, the state of the industry is rubbish, no one comes to our shows and music.
Total bollocks. It's absolute rubbish. If you write good material and play it well...
I think it's a rare thing for people to look at themselves. Bands
get signed every day, you know?
Yeah.
Bands get huge every month.
Yeah.
And the ones that do... I mean, occasionally, the industry's rubbish. The industry cherry-picks someone and it packages them and it tells us what we want to buy. Exactly. It tells us what we want to listen. Of course it does. But we don't all live in that world. We're not all going to be, you know, the next pop star. Rock and roll bands, metal bands, whatever, hardcore bands, the good ones go to the top. It's really, really simple to see. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Look at a band like, I mean, I don't know how much you know about the underground of rock, but a band like Narwhals, 2 years ago, they were nobody. They weren't even a band. Get together, write a couple of fantastic songs. Mm. Their influences are clear. They're not going to, you know, they're not mugging anyone off trying to say they're reinventing rock and roll.
Yeah.
They write a couple of really good songs and they play them really, really well. And now they are playing, academy size venues, within 18 months or 2 years. You know?
Yeah.
And they have labels from across the world interested in them, not just labels from, you know, South London or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they write good songs, they're playing well. Simple as that. There's no, you know, the momentum comes from the fact that people hear it. Shit, that's really good.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so if you don't get the momentum, it's not because people are dicks, it's because you're not writing good enough material. That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
No, obviously, bands slip through the net. Some bands don't get big.
Some bands do get absolutely just spoon-fed and packaged. And
of course. And
that's
some
always going to happen, though.
And some bands without, you know, it takes a little bit about, you know, like, you can write great material, but if you're lazy, if you don't get it out there, then no one's going to hear it. So, you know, there's bands that have slipped by. Southampton, I think, is particularly a bit of a tragic story. I mean, you've got bands like Dead, 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 Thomas Tantrum, Burn the Fleet. All these bands that are all incredible, way ahead of the curve, way in advance of their contemporaries, and didn't quite make the grade. And sometimes you can say, in the case of Dead, 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 it's probably just bad luck. Probably is just misfortune.
Mm.
You know, that they were coming out at the same time as bands like Franz Ferdinand. Someone picked Franz Ferdinand instead of Dead, Dead, Dead.
Yeah.
You can understand the situation like that. Burn the Fleet, bless them, probably didn't work hard enough, probably didn't show enough determination, probably didn't prove to the right people they were going to play as many shows as they wanted. You know? And, you know, it's so competitive, you have to be the complete package. But write great material, and people will come to your shows when you play them.
Obviously, bands pay to come and record and everything like that. When you started out, were you going out and saying to bands, "Oh, you can come and record"?
To an extent, yeah. I mean, we did a bit of, and you have to do a bit of self promotion. You have to do that kind of thing. It's less so now.
Yeah.
More now we've got a bigger name. You know, we have a lot more word of mouth about us. But there's still like so much competition. If I just sat back and didn't talk to bands, I wouldn't get much work. In fact, so, you know, like the it comes in sort of ebbs and flows anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, for last year, I was absolutely off my feet from the 1st of January, give or take, until got about September, October. And suddenly I just had this bam, sort of dry spell. I mean, it still had work, but it went from like non-stop to just suddenly like, oh, a day off. What do I do? What do you do with a day off? But yeah, if I hear a band I like, or I hear something in a band that I think could benefit me and my business, as cynical as that sounds,
okay.
Because sometimes
yeah.
you can have to show a bit of a ruthless streak. If I see something, I try my best to get it.
Okay.
Or, you know, like I said, my colleague Lewis, I mean, same kind of thing. Occasionally he sees a band, he saw Narwhals and was like,
yeah.
I got to work with these guys, they're amazing. And then, I mean, that's how you get work. You do a good job of a great band and then you get more work.
Yeah.
Or you do a great job of a shit band and people go, how on earth did you do that? You know,
exactly.
You know, it gets you work. But it's all about making sure your output is good. And then, if you can charm, do the charm offensive as well. I mean, I've got loads of work through basically trying not to be a dick to people, trying to be like a decent guy and say, look.
Well, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we've got like a set of rules at the studio. Number one is don't be a dick. I mean, it's straight up.
Yeah.
Be a nice guy. Like, I had a band in from London and they were saying, like, I don't know if you guys realise, but you're like a bit of a unique studio in London where they're from, like everyone is an arsehole. Like, they come down here and like it's not just about being nice, it's tolerant and sort of enthusiastic and all this kind of but like if you go to a studio up in London or, something like that, if you're wasting someone's time by not playing it right, they'll be like just deaf and blind. You guys just sit there and politely kind of try and get the best at. So, I don't know if that's an approach that is, I doubt it's unique. I've seriously done that, but it's certainly like a bit of a manifesto, like don't be a dick, like be a good guy and do a good job.
That's, yeah, you know.
It's kind of it, really.
Yeah. So you're recording bands quite often then?
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much day to day.
Yeah, what, who else works with you at the studio?
So the studio was set up by, I started it myself, and then but very, very soon after, I mean, before we even really opened the doors, another guy got involved.
Oh, okay.
A guy called Jeff Swan, who, me and Jeff sort of built the studio together, so to speak, and worked hard together. And I'd met a chap called Lou Johns, like, a year or so before I started it, and he had done some work experience with me, and he was already amazing, like, and he studied at SAE in London, he already knew his shit, and he was the exact kind of, like, Terminator record producer you want to have. You can see it straight away, and he wanted to, like, do work, and we basically said, look, come in, like, push yourself, and we'll give you the facility to do it. Obviously, you need to pay to play kind of thing, but we'll, get involved, And over time, I mean, it was a long, hard road for Lewis as well. And then he began to get a good name for himself doing specific kind of heavy kind of stuff. And then now he's absolutely toe-to-toe, if not more so, getting more work kind of thing. He's getting loads of great work. And, we're really proud of how much work he's put in. And he's undoubtedly now part of the business. It's like, I mean, legally and sort of emotionally, he's part of it. He's as invested as we are, so to speak. So it's us three, but Jeff, the initial founder, Jeff, he's now on a kind of sabbatical while he got an opportunity to work with a guy he's known for a long time who's an extremely successful mix engineer. So he's now on sabbatical. So he doesn't bring work in, but he's still, like invested.
Okay, cool. So was it a matter of, like, when did you start the studio? What year was it?
5 years ago. Something like that.
Oh,
4 or 5 years ago.
Cool.
5 years ago.
Yeah. Was it a matter of literally getting a space and building the...
Finding a space is quite hard.
Yeah.
It has to be... I mean, the space you've got, we've developed in something which works, but it's still not perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, by no means.
Okay.
There's issues with it, but the thing is, space is expensive. Property is expensive. Rates are expensive. Insurance is expensive, electricity, it goes on and on and on. So if you don't find the right space, then you'll be screwed really quickly. A lot of places, especially industrial spaces, they'll give you like good terms for like a year or two, you'll get a discount.
Okay.
Then after that, it's like you're paying full whack. And then
you're
basically screwed if you're not turning money over. So we started in a small space and we've developed it into a bigger space. So we've got a couple of control rooms, a big live room,
So the studio itself, what is it? How many rooms and everything is it?
So it's got two dedicated control rooms, okay. two dedicated live rooms.
Yeah.
And it's got a third multi-use space, which is small and basically a mixed suite slash green room slash okay. whatever we need it to be room, basically. Mm. It's got, you know, beds for bands crashing if they need to.
Oh, really? So you've got, like, rooms and stuff too?
Yeah, I mean...
All right. That's really good, actually.
Of a sort, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we do... We arrange accommodation when bands... We get bands from not
That's
just
really
England
good.
And Scotland, but we get European bands as well.
Oh, so right, okay, cool.
We need to be able to arrange accommodation. Yeah, so you got... There's a large control room, mm. a smaller control room, a large live room, a smaller live room.
Okay.
So it's like a, basically like a Studio A and Studio B setup.
Okay, that's really cool, actually, seeing the whole... that you put bands up, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I wouldn't advertise that too much.
But yeah.
There's elements of that.
But, yeah. Oh, okay, cool.
You know, it's basically more a case of we have space. We don't really... It's not a hotel.
Mm.
We don't...
Yeah.
You know, we
yeah.
don't... It's kind of just a space for bands to stay in. You know, obviously the studio's got showers and kitchen and all sorts anyway, so it's just a case of making sure there's somewhere they can... You know, a couple of bunk beds or whatever.
Yeah, well, so you've been around for, like, about 5 years.
The ranch has, yeah.
The ranch has, mm. the ranch has, yeah. Did you find it was a lot easier than you thought to actually get people to come in and pay?
I think it was... I worked 14-hour days for 3 years. So
yeah.
I think it's the result of that.
Put the work
it's
in.
It's the result of working yeah. like an idiot. and like yeah like I say the methodology I would suggest anyone using is find good bands to work with as much as you can and do the best job you can, so
okay.
bands like Dead 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 Burn the Fleet and Thomas Tantrum and those bands I worked with those bands when okay. they were on their way up
mm.
where, you know, as far as they got, whatever. Thomas Tantrum and went on to do some other stuff, and you know, a few of those bands I worked with, there's some other local bands I did some work with that I drew in more work, and then
okay.
I found that bands like Dead Dead Dead, who were on the cusp of potential greatness, certainly they had more interest and people offering them stuff.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to be able to get them to come and work in my studio at Planet Sounds for a week on a record, on a record. It's just...
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It's just not the right space for that.
Mm.
So that's why I moved out there, and I found that, yeah, I could get bands to come down and spend okay. longer in the studio and that kind of thing, and then... Yeah, we figured out a way of having, if they needed it, they could have a kip over kind of thing. Mm. And then we started noticing the bands are coming from further afield, London, Brighton, you know, the north.
Yeah.
Started doing a good job on them, and then you start getting bands from Scotland and Belgium and Sweden. And
wow. So it led on to different opportunities and having to yeah. work with different people and things like that. Are there any sort of notable names that you've worked with that it's led you to work with from where you've started, like the bands have said, oh, we know such and such? Is it sort of
kind of, I mean, I work with, I mean, it's still quite underground.
Yeah.
I mean, the project that we've got in at the moment, which is Lewis is engineering or producing rather the new record from Funeral for a Friend.
Oh, okay.
So I
all
mean,
right.
they're obviously that they have been a huge band.
Mm, yeah, they have, yeah.
And they've worked with big names and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it shows how much the name of the studio and our names, like,
yeah.
I mean, for Lewis to get that, I mean, it's fantastic. It, obviously, it's resonating down the halls of the music scene or whatever. I mean, but I've worked with, I would say there are still underground bands that I worked with. I mean, bands like Polar and Heights and More Than Life. I mean, they've got big profiles in their
yeah.
genres. I mean, they're playing stuff like Download and massive European
yeah.
tours and stuff
okay.
like that. So they're not without... Not
yeah.
without status, but they're I don't think they're celebrity.
Mm.
My mind always goes blank at stuff like this. I mean, did some engineering on stuff like King Blues.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Only a bit of engineering.
Yeah.
I didn't,
oh,
I didn't
yeah,
produce
yeah,
anything
yeah.
like that. And, oh God, I can't think. I really can't think. There's been some, like, we had Bill Steer from Carcass, he brought his band down. That was cool, because when I was a really young kid, I'd see Carcass on MTV
yeah.
and be like, oh my God, they're so heavy. So meeting Bill Steer was cool.
Yeah.
Working with Bill Steer was cool. He was amazing as well. He's such an amazing guitarist. So that was
yeah.
really good fun. But yeah, you know, like, there's the odd person that's either had fame or celebrity at some point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say we're not rolling punches with the big boys. You know, I'm not under any
yeah.
illusions. I mean, But certainly, you know, bands like More Than Life and Landscapes, they've got big profiles and they're going to do bigger things, like Landscapes and Polar. I think 2014, they're both going to be absolutely. I think they're going to be breakthrough years for both bands. They're both brilliant at what they do, and there's momentum behind both. You know?
I think there's definitely we're at a point in the industry now where there's a lot of new sounds and everything coming out. There's a definite switch in how things are being written and the sounds of.
Kids are getting into heavier stuff as well. I know it makes me sound like an old man, but I can't believe some of the music that teenagers listen to. It scared the bejesus out of me when I was.
Spectrum, it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's all sorts of things. No one could predict who's going to be.
No, you can't.
You know, you could sit and ask me who the biggest band we've had in is, and I'd be like, something. But who knows what could happen to any of these artists.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of the artists we work with are exceptional. I mean, myself and Lewis have. I've worked on projects in the last, I'd say, last 6 months that we have complete confidence will lead to big things. I mean, we've also done records in the last 5 years where we can't believe they didn't get big. Burn the Fleet being the obvious one. Literally can't believe they didn't get huge. They were exceptional. And as biased I might be, because I've become great friends with them as I worked with them, but I mean, they are exceptional. Were exceptional. Kerouac are the same. I mean, both local bands are both...
Yeah.
Incredible at what they did and how they didn't get great acclaim, how success eluded them just doesn't make sense to me. But whereas other bands have gone on to do well, there's the balance between craft and graft.
So me and Tim, you know, we were having a chat about this, that like how there's different, we were discussing possible maybe different strategies that bands have of trying to get themselves out there, and it's quite difficult to really pinpoint it, because when a band does make it big, you go, oh, I always knew they were going to be, but you didn't.
You can't predict it.
You can never say.
I think in the last 5 years of doing this, I think of the 10 bands I would have predicted to get big, I don't think any of them have.
Wow.
But bands I didn't see coming.
Yeah, just.
Got big.
Just blow up, yeah.
Yeah. I suppose that probably tells you more about my taste and my style. Never working A&R, but I mean, Narwhals, I think as soon as anyone heard Narwhals, we knew that. I mean, the thing, the issues with bands like that is there is this kind of glass ceiling for that kind of like music, punk rock, hardcore, whatever. There's a ceiling that you just can't get through if you're a British band. You know, if you're out in the States, it's just on a bit greater scale.
Yeah,
you know, so I mean, bands like Narwhals, if they were American, I think they'd be bloody huge.
It's
a bigger audience, you know.
It's interesting. I was watching the Foo Fighters Back and Forth documentary or whatever. Mm. It might have been the 606 Studios one. I can't remember. Dave Grohl related. But there was a... he was talking... Oh, yeah, I think it was the Foo Fighters one. He was talking about his time in Nirvana and how, like, jocks would be turning up to Nirvana shows. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You used to beat me up at school while listening, like, we do artists listen to our music. And I think nowadays, definitely, everyone's listening to all kinds of music.
Yeah.
And
I went to a Biffy Clyro show a couple of years ago in Southampton. It was just full of Radio 1 guys. I mean, guys in deep neck V T-shirts. What the hell? Like, Biffy were doing this 10 years ago. Where were you when they were playing?
Biffy have been around a lot longer than people realise.
Absolutely. They've been... seriously earned... You know, they've paid their dues. And, you know, no band probably deserves it more than they do. But, but yeah, like, some of these guys with tribal tattoos and fake tan are standing there watching Biffy.
Like, that's a whole other conversation for another time.
That is not right. Yeah, but that's the way of it, you know?
Yeah, that is.
Okay, so after that, Neil had to run off and he had to do a lecture with some students. But there we go. That is all the time we have on the Independent Music Podcast this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I thought it was a good chat about, you know, opening a studio and things like that. But make sure you come back, subscribe to us on iTunes, and peace out.